This is LabCast, ideas and insights for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs. Hi everyone, welcome to LabCast. This is your host, Jonathan Crow. This week's guests on the program are Jeremiah Gardner and Brant Cooper, authors of the new book, The Lean Brand. I'm particularly excited to have you guys on board this week because, as everyone probably knows, we're big fans of lean and agile development here at OpenView. But one thing I personally really enjoyed is seeing that the discussion around lean is starting to break outside the confines of product development. All of a sudden, there are people other than developers talking about being agile and about applying lean agile principles to other disciplines like marketing and sales. I think that's fantastic. I think it's really, really interesting. And so a great case in point is this book, which is the first to apply lean principles to brand development. I'm really excited to dive in. But before we do, I thought we could step back just a little bit and mention that Brant, we've had you on the program before, last year, around the release of your first book, The Lean Entrepreneur. So these books obviously have a close connection. And for my first question, Brant, I thought you could maybe talk a little bit about your decision to follow up The Lean Entrepreneur with this new book, The Lean Brand. What was the story there?
Yeah, sure, Jonathan. So as we all know by now, hopefully, the lean and lean entrepreneur and lean brand and lean startup is about eliminating waste. And when Jeremiah reached out to me to talk up to me about his book project, The Lean Brand, I was super interested because I believe that branding is where there's still an incredible amount of waste. And so I was immediately drawn to that. And as Jeremiah and I were talking, the thought had occurred to me that really everything that I was talking about inside of the value stream, sort of in a broad sense, was really talking about brand. So a value stream in lean parlance is all of the value add activities that an organization goes through in order to create and deliver value to a customer. And when you're a startup, that's really, or a large enterprise that's doing innovative practices, those are really unknowns. And so your value stream is really made up of a set of assumptions. And so in The Lean Entrepreneur, I talked about framework, this value stream discovery tool. And so it's really about documenting these assumptions about what the business needs to do to make customers first aware, all the way through becoming passionate about a product or service. And what is the customer behavior then is expected, and then how can you measure that? And so in a very lean startup fashion, you can document assumptions and start running experiments to discover what the value is that you're creating and for whom. And so what sort of was occurring to us is that, you know, there's this step we call satisfaction, which is really about the product utility. Does the product fulfill the promise that you've made, right, about solving a particular problem or addressing a passion? And then the next step beyond that is creating these passionate customers. And really the passionate, you know, as I talk about in the book, is really about this emotional element. It's about the emotional impact that the product and the company have on this person whose problem you're solving. And it really, at that point, it was like, duh. The moment you're talking about the passion that is developed in a customer around a company, well, now you really are talking about the brand. And so that's really where the dovetail is between these books is Jeremiah is sort of bringing this thought leadership around how you develop a brand in a lean way that dovetails right into the value stream discovery tool that we introduced in The Lean Entrepreneur.
All right, great. And a lot of people, when you think of lean and agile, you know, people automatically think of developers, right? Well, actually, these concepts can be applied to other facets of the company, too. So, Jeremiah, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about why you think it's so important that marketers and also just founders start thinking about how they can take those concepts and apply them to other parts of the business. And also, I was curious to hear your thoughts about where in the process of kind of building and establishing a company you think this process really lies. Is it something that comes after product development? Or should you be thinking of these things all along?
Sure. Thanks again, Jonathan, for having me. Excited to be here. Yeah, I think first let me kind of answer the first part of your question about why lean approach to brand actually matters and applying it there. And I think as kind of Brant said, a lot of startups kind of run the risk of creating a lot of waste in brand development. And in fact, I think the conventional model of branding that we've kind of been using for years and years and years is geared towards this creation of waste and is asking kind of the wrong questions when it comes to innovation and when it comes to startups specifically. And so I think that lean as a methodology, when you apply it to something like brand, which I think the first step is to really understand what is a brand is a huge question, and there's so many definitions out there. And I think when you kind of get to the root of what those questions are, what those definitions are really getting at, it's brand is the relationship that develops between an organization and an audience. And it's that relationship that leads people to passion. It's that relationship that leads people to care about a startup, to care about an organization in a way that reaches beyond simply solving a functional problem they might have. And so lean branding really solves the problem of the waste that's being created in the conventional model by asking the question of how do these relationships develop and how can we provide a framework to help startups learn what works and what doesn't in relationship to building a passionate following with the people that become their ultimate customers. And so I think that that's kind of why lean works in the branding world and why it's so important to have this conversation now. And then to answer kind of your second question about where in the process does this fit, well, when you think about brand as a relationship, it happens on day one. The first time that you mention your idea to, you know, your roommate or to your wife or, you know, your mom or dad, you're starting to build that relationship right there. And then the first time that you run an experiment with, you know, a customer or you have your first kind of customer development conversations, that's brand. And so brand isn't the logo and isn't the color scheme and isn't, you know, this vision statement and these brand promise statements and these, you know, long decks that kind of create all this waste about, you know, projecting what you want people to believe about you. Brand's really much simpler than that. It's the relationship. And the question that lean really works to answer is how does that relationship develop and how can you build it in a way that's sustainable and in a way that creates passionate customers?
It seems like one thing that comes up a lot is this idea of, you know, telling your story. So you as a company determining, basically broadcasting to the world, here's who we are, here's what we're all about. This is something that a lot of companies don't do a great job at, especially in the startup world. There's a lot of focus on product, and then this thing kind of comes afterwards. I think this the book and a lot of the topics you're covering really are kind of addressing that head on, and would love to hear your thoughts about you know, any advice you have for how companies can go about actually developing that story. How should they approach it? What are some steps they can take to help them discover who it is they want to be, saying, here's who we are and what we care about?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a huge topic, right? And I think we kind of tackle that topic in a lot of ways in our book. But one of the things that I would say is that sometimes, you know, it comes back down to something that's so simple, and that's why did you choose to do this? And there are obviously layers to every story, right? There's a founder layer, you know, the Elon Musk layer of who he is and why he chose to do this. And that evolves into a story about a startup, you know, the SpaceX story or the Tesla story in terms of what they stand for as an organization. But the centerpiece of all this stuff is why do you do that? What makes you get up in the morning? What truly caused you to kind of take that that risk of forming an organization and an entity and trying to deliver value and discover value with an audience? And so, you know, there isn't a short click, you know, or a short path to answering that question in terms of, oh, just answer this question and you'll know your story. It's much deeper than that. And so I think, you know, when a startup approaches, you know, their story, it's really comes down to looking in the mirror and having honest conversations about why they're doing what they're doing, the aspiration that they're chasing as a startup, what change they want to see in the world, and being able to be familiar with that, be confident in it, and be able to really talk about that with their audience in an honest way. And then I think it comes down to, you know, the next step is really to go out and talk to the customers and talk to your potential audience and say, does it resonate? You know, what about us resonates and what about us doesn't? And that's part of the learning process about making a compelling story and not just saying, you know, since I was five, I always wanted to run my own bagel shop. Well, that story doesn't connect with anybody but yourself. And so the story is not only about who you are, but it's also about who your audience is, and connecting those pieces in kind of a synchronicity is where brand really starts to have an impact on the organization, on the business in the whole.
Well, it seems go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's sort of this tricky area, right? Because we teach entrepreneurs that they have to be these visionaries, right? So we probably even talked about this in our past conversations, this whole myth of the visionary thing.
Right.
And so these entrepreneurs, you know, they have this particular vision, and it's usually around their product. And they're taught that they must not change the product, that they have to have conviction, and that they have to go out and build this thing. And in a lot of my talks around the myth of the visionary, what I talk about is, well, actually, the true quote-unquote visionaries in the world are those that relentlessly pursue a change that they want to see in the world, and actually they're willing to be flexible in the product in order to find out what is it that the market actually wants. And so it's this, just as Jeremiah was saying, it's this convergence around the direction that the market pulls you in concert with the change that you actually want to see in the world. And out of that develops the story where you and your audience, you and your customer, your startup and your customers have this shared aspiration, this shared change that they want to make, whether it's something, you know, global or something that's inside these people's lives that you're impacting. You're going to go on this journey to reach this aspiration, and that sort of becomes the basis of the you know, your marketing, the basis of your brand, and inside of that is this product that has the utility value of solving a problem. But the brand really is around this larger emotional impact that you're trying to achieve together.
Right, and I think you bring up a really good point, and that's exactly where I was hoping you would go with this. Because when you talk about kind of establishing your brand and your company's story, I think a lot of people do jump to that vision of, okay, well, it's the founders or kind of sitting alone brainstorming, and they're going to do a lot of introspection, which I think probably is a necessary part of the process. But then when you're talking about applying this lean concept to it, that implies that you really need to go out there and test and iterate too. So it also implies that you need to be open to even adjusting what you think that right story is based on getting feedback. So do you guys have any suggestions in terms of getting that feedback, or is it as simple as just sending out surveys and having conversations? Is there any kind of standard thing that you're looking at in terms of gauging, okay, is what we're telling really connecting?
Go ahead, Ryan. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that the first thing it starts with is hypothesizing who you think your high-value customer is going to be. So who is it that has the problem that you think you're solving? Who is it that has the pain the deepest so that if you solve it, it's going to have this bigger impact? And so part of it is simply hypothesizing different personas, different market segments, where you think that these people have this problem and that solving that problem will have this big impact. So it's often really difficult for entrepreneurs to think about the impact side of things. You know, it's sort of soft. It starts soft, like, I'm going to save them time. I'm going to save them money. But really, people make decisions based on you know, sort of more impactful things like that. So if you're selling into a business, you know, are you going to turn the buyer into a hero? You know, is the person that buys your product going to save the day? Are they going to save the network? Are they, what is the impact that they're going to be feeling? You know, based on their relationship with their boss or with the company, what are they? Is your product putting your IT manager at risk that if he buys your product, he's going to lose his job. You know, I sort of was trying to sell a product in that realm once, and it was very difficult, right? So what is the emotional impact that the problem's going to have for these different market segments? And then you can start figuring out, okay, how do I start testing the messaging and the positioning and the story that works within those different market segments? And then part of it also has to be about your own personal values, right? If you're going to choose to not go after the market segment that you're passionate about, then is that still consistent with the change that you're trying to bring? And so that's really sort of where the introspection comes in. And really, with a lot of entrepreneurs, it's really very difficult for them to articulate this. And it sort of seems obvious, but a lot of founders are so stuck into the product features and benefits that they're not able to describe the real value that they're providing or the real change that they want to see. And they need to get outside of their product focus in order to start evaluating that and then testing it. And testing really has to happen in person. Surveys, yeah. You know, people can only respond to what you've put in the survey. So if there's something outside of the survey, you're not getting that. And when you're talking about emotional things, it's very difficult for people to lie about that. And so if you're face to face with people and you're testing, you know, the essentially the value proposition and the emotional impact, you should be able to see in the person's eyes, in their reaction, whether they're responding to this you know, this problem, this bigger issue that you're trying to resolve. What were you going to say, Jeremiah?
Yeah, all that's great. I mean, I think, you know, another piece to everything that you just said, too, is that there's an aspect to what startups and founders are asking themselves that kind of needs to evolve as well is, you know, the question isn't how do I get my first 1,000 customers? The question is how do I get one? How does one person become passionate about me? How can I identify the shared aspiration between that one person and, you know, the change I'm chasing in the world and who we are as a startup? And that can't happen in a survey. That can't happen in kind of these traditional clinical marketing research ideas or big data or just simply looking at demographics. Those may point you in the right direction, but you're never going to get validation on that one simply asking someone on a survey, are you passionate about us? So you have to be in front of your customer. You have to be out there taking guesses at who you think shares your aspiration and why and to what level that matters and what level the impact, the emotional impact will have on their lives. And getting to that one person is going to teach you. Oh, let me make a caveat too. One person that isn't your mom and that isn't, you know, your best friend that they're going to be nice to you and say they're passionate about it without ever understanding what you're doing. But that first customer. And so there's lots of ways to experiment in low and safe, low-fi and safe to fail ways. But the question that I think is vital to building passion is, can we win one passionate advocate to our cause? Can we win one passionate advocate that is completely bought in and impacted by the change we want to see in the world? And if we can do that and we can understand why that person's passionate, then we have a shot at replicating that maybe, to make it into 5 people. And if we can make it into 5 people, we made it into 10 and so on and so forth. And so that's the critical question when it comes to brand development. It isn't about, oh, well, you know, everybody who, is in this demographic really likes the color green, therefore you should be green. That's the questions that the conventional model are asking. The question that we're trying to ask is, how does one person become passionate and how can you understand the value stream that they took to get there?
All right, well, here's one question that's shifting gears just a little bit, but who owns brand, within a company?
It's shared. It's absolutely shared between your audience and your organization. And I think, we can go into a high-level kind of philosophical discussion about all this, but at the end of the day, customers will attribute value or render you completely irrelevant to them. And so you can have the greatest brand in the, you know, sense of the conventional, you know, model's word, the best logo, the most amazing story, written paragraphs, and the most incredible messaging. And if it never connects with an audience, then you don't have anything. And so brand as a relationship is shared. And so, go ahead.
Well, it's a great question. I think Jeremiah is spot on. I think that, I think that in the same way that the CTO is largely responsible for product, I think it's likely that the CMO is largely responsible for brand. Mm-hmm. If you're down the path of having that many people, ultimately, you know, it's the CEO. Ultimately, it's really what Jeremiah says, that in the same way, everybody should own the product as well. I think that, you know, when it comes to lean and cross-functional teams and trying to determine whether you're building products that people want and having hypothesis-driven feature additions even, I think in the same way that everybody should own that, your product managers and your customer support and your salespeople and your marketing people, as well as your engineers and designers, I think that everybody also owns a piece of brand, and everybody should be thinking about it. And that's actually how you get out of the mindset that brand is your logo and your tagline and your color palette, right, is because everybody takes ownership of it. And ultimately, you know, the CEO needs to not pass those things off onto departmental silos. I think that a lot of entrepreneurs are scared of the word brand, and a lot of marketing, and they think it's sort of this black box and that they can't understand it. And so, you know, the buck really stops with the CEO in the sense that he or she needs to go ahead and understand brand as much as possible and realize it's not just the assets, it's not just the artifacts, but it's everything that they do, as well as really everything that they don't do that has interaction with customers is affecting the brand. And so if the CEO can start understanding brand in that way, then he or she will know that it really is the responsibility of everybody in the organization.
Right, right. And I think you can see in the organizations that really get it right, you can see how it's there and it pops up kind of in every aspect of the business, from not just the customer support, it's also in the sales, the marketing, and in the product itself too.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, I think jumping into what I think is kind of the most fun part here, I know you guys are including some case studies in the book. You're diving into some companies that you found that are doing some really cool things around, you know, developing a lean brand. Can you talk a little bit about that, and maybe if you found any examples of companies doing some cool, just kind of quick and easy experiments around developing their lean brand?
Sure. One of my absolute favorites is a company called Beta Brand up in San Francisco, and they're kind of an off-kilter clothing company that, you know, creates things like, you know, if you think about like disco ball hoodies or, you know, reversible smoking jackets with skull buttons and things like that. And I think one of the things that they've done really, really well is to kind of be very kind of open to what their relationship with their audience ends up being. And so in tons of aspects, in almost every aspect of their startup, they're inviting customer participation. They're inviting their audience to have a say and to, you know, participate in the building of their startup. And people are just passionate about Beta Brand and about their clothes and about the story that their clothes are telling. And so that's just kind of one example of a company that I think is really getting it right. I guess there's lots of them, and we talk about them in the book a lot, and have specific case studies, but Beta Brand really stands out to me as someone that has worked really hard to build that passion with their audience.
What I love about it too is that you know, I think that when, again, when people tend to think about brand and then even experimenting within a brand, they're thinking about, you know, split testing a logo, which is fine. But what we're really trying to get to is that example that Jeremiah just gave, that really to understand your relationship with your audience, you know, do some sort of what Jeremiah calls a dynamic artifact, so that fashion show is actually a branding artifact. And so instead of spending your money on, you know, letterhead and pens and logos, maybe you should do a wacky event like that and understand sort of what is this relationship that you actually have with your audience.
The dynamic experience will always win over something as static as a logo or a color scheme that really, at the end of the day, doesn't matter.
Well, it seems like there's a couple elements that pop up from these types of experiments. And what you're pointing out is, you know, these are really good ones that can help move companies towards establishing another great term you guys use, the minimum viable brand. You know, there's the minimum viable product. Everybody knows about that, how as a startup you're pushing to develop really kind of the one thing with the least amount of effort to get you some good feedback so you can move forward and iterate. And you guys are talking about this, the same thing can be applied to branding. One of the elements that jumps out is, you know, kind of that interactivity that you need. It needs to be something that that your audience can experience directly and interact with, and then you're able to get kind of immediate feedback from. Are there any other elements that jump out like that that you consider these are the things that should be involved in your branding experiments?
It's kind of a hard question because there isn't necessarily like a checklist. You know, I think this is a great example of kind of the juxtaposition between kind of the conventional branding model and the agency model, and mm-hmm. kind of what we're saying is that you know, in the agency model, there's this checklist, right? They're like, we're going to come in and do a branding process. And in that branding process, we're going to define your mission, check. You know, your values, check. Your vision, check. You know, your color scheme, check. We got all these things. And the idea is that if we add all these things together, the end of the equation will equal a brand.
Right.
And you walk away with, you know, this deck that is your brand, and now you have one, you know, and now you just need to broadcast it to the world and everyone will love it. And there's an inherent fallacy and a myth about that thinking, because a brand only takes on meaning when it's shared with an audience, right? And when someone can get value from it. And so there isn't necessarily, like, I think we avoid being prescriptive in saying that, you know, here's, if you do these 10 things, you'll have a brand. Because the journey is going to be different for everybody. So instead, what we kind of say is that, no, it's really about being hypothesis-driven, not outcome-driven. And if you're hypothesis-driven, then you're taking a guess. And you may say something like, you know, the heart attack video or, you know, the world's first certified single male fashion show. Those were guesses that they might connect. And they could have failed miserably. And I'm guessing that, and I know actually that for every big success like that, there are 10 other ideas that led them there that may have failed. And so our drive is really to say with lean brand development is that you have to be willing to experiment, you have to be willing to learn, and you have to be willing to move in a way that brings you towards passion, towards connection with your audience. And no, you know, outside element is going to give you that. You know, Nike made the swoosh didn't make Nike. And so how can you get there, right?
So the key is that you're focusing on different areas depending on where you are as a startup. Just like if in your MVP and your product market fit, you know, where you are as a startup, what your resources are going to determine where you're focusing your efforts on. And so what we're prescribing is that you make sure that you're testing. What we're saying is that you want to make sure that you're adding a brand test element to your value stream discovery. So if you're following the value stream discovery framework, for example, and this applies really whether or not you're following it specifically, but during your minimum viable product testing, right? You're trying to figure out, are you developing the right product? And you might be starting by doing some viability tests. There's branding elements to every one of those experiments. Your messaging and positioning are part of your branding elements. So you're not talking just simply about, when you're trying to do a landing page example, for example, you're not trying to just specifically test what the products and features are. You also have to be testing whether there's, what is the hook? What's the emotional element that gets people to convert on that page? If you're doing a really the experiments that Jeremiah were giving in the case studies are like the equivalent of a concierge viability test, where you're actually doing things in person in order to measure what customers will do rather than what they say they do. And so those two examples are sort of like concierge viability tests for brand. And so there's all of the type of experiments that ones are thinking about in terms of products, you can also do. You just want to make sure that you're including a brand element, so that you're including the emotional value. So instead of actually just testing, this drives me nuts, right? So I love 99 Designs, and I love that people can crowdsource logos. But if you crowdsource the logo independent of the value that you're trying to provide a customer, it's really a worthless experiment. Now, it may be that you can get it at low cost, and so that's good enough, right? So part of what we're preaching here is that you don't want to spend a lot of time and money developing brand artifacts when you don't know the value that you're creating, you don't know the relationship that you're in with your audience.
Right.
Spending too much time and money at that point is a waste, and I guarantee you, everybody that listens to this is thinking about either developing a logo and spending a lot of money on it, or they've already done it. And really what we're trying to get these early stage entrepreneurs to think about is the first stab at it really is not that important. And all of those blog posts that tell you how to name your company are not that important. It all represents waste, because eventually when you discover the relationship that you're going to have with your audience based upon the product utility and the emotional impact solving problems have on your audience, until you understand that, you're guessing, and you're likely going to rebrand. And really, there's no better example. Go to the Wayback Machine and type in your favorite startup and look at the logos and the branding that they had around when they were originally started. And you'll find that they did not spend a lot of time and money on it. Their original Google, their original Facebook, they didn't spend a ton of money on that stuff because it didn't matter. What mattered in the early stage was, what's the relationship based upon the product utility and the emotional value that you're going to bring these people, regardless if it's whether it's a conscious emotional value. So as much as we talk about all that, it's not like you can walk up to somebody on the street and say, listen, what's the emotional value that we could bring to you if you're allowed to socialize with your friends online? That's like not how you get to it. But if you can dive into actually what people are doing online and how it does impact their lives, then that's where you're garnering the emotional value and what's going to drive the marketing.
Right. Yeah, and I think I would add to that too is that exactly what Brant just said is just, you know, proof to the fact that, everything is interconnected. And so, you can't simply, cherry pick one piece and product over brand over product, or culture over both, and these things, they're all interconnected from your customer's point of view. And so to kind of, make the point a little farther about brands, what Brant's saying is, you think about a company like Kodak, who in the branding world, achieved nirvana, with the term Kodak moment. I mean, a picture is considered their product and their company, right? And yet, as strong as that brand is, as strong as that relationship with their audience is, they fail because they don't evolve their product forward, right? And they eventually get disrupted and become irrelevant. And you can make an argument that the relationship with Kodak still would matter, or that they're, people still know what it is, but you can't go as far as to say that that Kodak creates value today. And so when you're at an early stage, you know, and you're trying to keep all these things in silos, you're thinking about it from your perspective, and you need to change that perspective to think about it from your customer's perspective and realize that they receive value from all of the things that you do, from brand to culture to product, that ultimately impact their lives and satisfy them on a product level and lead them to passion on a brand level, and the impetus for both becomes the culture that you've developed inside of the building. And so I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind when you're trying to discover and deliver value of any sort, whether you know, you're a large company or you're, you know, super early stage startup.
Well, that's great, and it's a great point to close on. And so, Jeremiah and Brent, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time. Definitely encourage everyone to check out the book. I know I'm really personally excited to see the finished book. Can you tell me a little bit more about where people can catch up with you guys, pre-order the book, and where they can find more from you?
Yeah, so if you go to leanbrandbook.com, you can kind of connect there. You can pre-order both a physical hard copy and a digital copy. The book will be launching in the first week of October, and we're really excited about it. And then we'll be off kind of doing some speaking tours, hoping actually to head out to Boston. So maybe we'll see you there. So yeah, connect with us. And then you can also follow us both on Twitter. I'm at Jeremiah Gardner, and Brant's at Brant Cooper. And we're both pretty active there. And so we'd love to connect with you guys. I know this is new stuff, and so we understand that it's going to take some time to really have some conversations around this stuff to help startups really create more valuable brands.
Great. All right. Well, thanks again, guys. I really appreciate your time, and looking forward to connecting again in the future.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Take care.